Kapila Uvacha,
Kapila Uvacha,
Atta,
Atta,
Yogriha,
Mediya,
Dharma, Evavasa,
Evavasa,
Grihe,
Kama,
Artha, Cha,
Dharma,
Dogdhi Bhuya Piparti Ta Kapila Uvacha Atta Yogriha Mediya Dharmane Vavasangrihe Amartam cha dharman swa
Amartam cha dharman swa
Dogdi buya pipartita
Dogdi buya pipartita
Kapila Uvacha
Kapila Uvacha
Atta yogriha mediya
Atta yogriha mediya
Karmane vavasangrihe Kamamartam cha dharman sva
Kamamartam cha dharman sva
Dogdi buya pipartita
Dogdi buya pipartita
Kapila Uvacha
Kapila Uvacha
Atta yogriha mediya
Atta yogriha mediya
Dharmane vavasangrihe
Dharmane vavasangrihe
Amartam cha dharman sva
Amartam cha dharman sva
Dogdi buya pipartita
Dogdi buya pipartita
Kapila Uvacha
Kapila Uvacha
Lord Kapila said
Lord Kapila said
Atta
Atta
Now
Now
Ya
Atta
The person who
The person who
Griha Mediya
Griha Mediya
Of the householders
Of the householders
Dharma
Dharma
Duties
Duties
Eva
Eva
Certainly
Certainly
Avasa
Avasa
Living
Living
Grihe
Grihe
At home
At home
Kama
Kama
Sense gratification
Sense gratification
Artha
Artha
Economic development
Economic development
Cha
Cha
And
And
Dharma,
Dharma,
religious rituals,
religious rituals,
Sva,
Sva
his,
his,
Dogdhi,
Dogdhi,
enjoys,
enjoys,
Bhuya,
Bhuya,
again and again,
again and again,
Piparti,
Piparti,
performs,
performs,
Ta,
Ta
them,
them.
Translation. The personality of Godhead said, the person who lives in the center of household life derives material benefits by performing religious rituals, and thereby he fulfills his desire for economic development and sense gratification. Again and again he acts the same way. purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are two kinds of households. One is called the Grihamedi, and the other is called the Grihastha. The objective of the Grihamedi is sense gratification, and the objective of the Grihastha is self-realization. Here the Lord is speaking about the Grihamedi, or the person who wants to remain in this material world. His activity is to enjoy material benefits by performing religious rituals for economic development, and thereby ultimately satisfy the senses. He does not want anything more. Such a person works very hard throughout his life to become very rich and eat very nicely and drink. By giving some charity for pious activity, he can go to a higher planetary atmosphere in the heavenly planets in his next life. But he does not want to stop the repetition of birth and death and finish with the concomitant miserable factors of material existence. Such a person is called a Grihamedi. A Grihastha is a person who lives with family, wife, children and relatives but has no attachment for them. He prefers to live in family life rather than as a mendicant or sannyasi, but his chief aim is to achieve self-realization or to come to the standard of Krishna consciousness. Here, however, Lord Kapiladev is speaking about the Grihamedis, who have made their aim the materialistically prosperous life, which they achieve by sacrificial ceremonies, by charities, and by good work. They are posted in good positions, and since they know that they're using up their assets of pious activities, they again and again perform activities of sense gratification. It is said by Prahlad Maharaj, Panapanas Charvata Charvananam, they prefer to chew the already chewed. Again and again, they experience the material pangs, even if they're rich and prosperous. But they do not want to give up this kind of life. Kapila Uvacha, Aptayo Grihamedyan, Dharman Eva Vasangrihe, Kamam Artam Chadharman Svan, Doti Buya. The personality of Godhead said, the person who lives in the center of household life derives material benefits by performing religious rituals, and thereby he fulfills his desire for economic development and sense gratification. Again and again, he acts in the same way. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutanesha Patipati Vedanta Swamiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastyachyadesh Dharane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Lord Kapila in the previous chapter was discussing about material entanglement. Actually, particularly in terms of the attraction for the opposite sex. And particularly, at least the way he was expressing it, speaking as if he's speaking to men, he's saying that be very careful about the association of women. Of course, we understand that ultimately there's a principle involved. And women also have to be very careful in their dealings with men, because Cupid, Kamadev, is a very active demigod, you could say. Or you could say our propensity for becoming attracted to the opposite sex is extremely deeply ingrained, and it has been such for many lifetimes. It is not just something we awoke to a few years ago in this lifetime, but it's such a deep part of material existence. In the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna begins by describing a reflected banyan tree, or a reflected tree. There is a tree. It is standing on the bank of a lake, right on the edge. And when the lake is nice and calm, then you can see the reflection of the tree in the lake extremely clearly. In fact, it's identical, really. It's basically identical. Every leaf, every fruit, every flower, every twig, every little nuance of color in the branches, and it's all there. It really is. And so Lord Krishna gives this example to illustrate the relationship between the spiritual world, which is the real tree, and the material world, which is the reflection. It looks just like the real thing, the reflection. It's just like the real thing. It's amazing. Many, many years ago, in the 70s, we were doing book distribution in Belfast, in Northern Ireland, in the middle of the Civil War. And one time for some days, we stayed in the house of a Hindu family. They were not very religious, but they let us stay. And on the wall was a painting or some photo or some picture of the Taj Mahal. After we'd been there a few days, well, in front of the Taj Mahal, there are waterways. After we'd been there a few days, we realized the picture was upside down. Yeah. We were looking at the reflection. The reflection, the water is in the front, it's beneath, it was above. What we thought was the Taj Mahal was the reflection. This actually happened. It was one of those wow moments when someone said, "Hey, this picture's upside down." So, Krishna is expert. He is the expert of all experts in everything. And when he has made this material world as a reflection of the real spiritual world, he has done it expertly. You know, we have to give Krishna credit for many things, but this is one of the things we have to give Krishna credit for, that he has just done a fantastic job in this material world of giving people an apparent alternative to life in the spiritual world. It is just, you know, any lesser being could not have made it so convincing that, you know, we can do it. We can do it. We really can do it. That conviction is so deeply entrenched in the heart of the conditioned soul. that even though they have been trying to do it for many lifetimes, actually millions, in all different types of ways, in all different types of species. Sri Sri Gornitai Kita.
Joy.
Sri Nrasingadev Bhagavan Kita.
Joy.
So, even though we've been trying for many lifetimes to achieve the goal, which is independent enjoyment, do our own thing and just feel really extremely happy as we do it, despite our very determined efforts in that direction, we have failed miserably every lifetime. But despite that, next lifetime we enter the world from some mother's womb, and again there's not really any question. Generally there's no real question. Is this process of sense gratification the right path for me, or should I try something else? It's just spontaneous. It's amazing. And indeed, you will read after some time in the fourth canto, in the description of Maharaj Preetu. He was the king, and one day the four Kumars came. And he, as Preetu Maharaj, as a great devotee king, he saw the four Kumars enter his palace, and immediately he wanted to greet them and just welcome them into the palace. So he did. He jumped up from his throne, just dropped everything, and just ran to the four Kumars to greet them very nicely. And the verse says there that his enthusiasm, his feeling of inspiration to greet the four Kumars and relish their association was so extremely strong. The Bhagavatam says it was just like the attraction of a conditioned soul to sense gratification. This is the example to illustrate how extremely enthusiastic he was. How could he have been any more enthusiastic? So the reflection then of that banyan, of that tree, or banyan tree, whatever, some sort of tree, it looks very convincing. And therefore people are convinced, and they're trying their best. And in most cases, there's no question of there being a possibility of there being another way to live. It's just, they would say, self-evident. You must do sense gratification. So therefore, they're dipping into the reflected tree. Because that's the material world. The real tree is the spiritual world. They're dipping into the reflected tree. Oh, let me pick a fruit. There's the fruit in the reflection. They pick the fruit. Oh, there's nothing there. No substance. Looks good, but there's no substance. Let me smell the flower. Bend over to sniff the flower in the reflection. Get a nose full of water. Let me try to climb the tree. Jump into the tree and go straight down into the lake. So, it's amazing. Anyway, the thing is though, in this regard, the particular point I wanted to bring out, which is a point made there in Bhagavad Gita, is that in the real tree, at the top, is Radha and Krishna. In the reflected tree, At the bottom, well, in the reflection, the top is the bottom, isn't it? In the reflected tree, the bottom is you and me trying to be Radha and Krishna. That's what it is. It's at the bottom. It is really the most entangling, degrading, dangerous aspect of the whole reflected tree. And this is a very important point to understand in Krishna consciousness and to try to get realization about. Because it's such a prominent feature of material existence. Prabhupada made the point on a number of occasions. You have to go to school to learn language properly. You have to go to school to learn so many things properly. But you don't have to go to school to learn how to become attracted to the opposite sex. There is no such school, because everybody knows there's no need. So this is being discussed here. Well, it was discussed already in at least the later part of the previous chapter. I'm sure you had some interesting classes about that. I imagine very few devotees fell asleep in the classes, because we've seen many times as soon as you mention something about the attraction to the opposite sex, one way or the other, positively, negatively, in whatever context, suddenly, oh, attention is there. And even people who were asleep are suddenly wide awake. And for that matter, I imagine many of you are aware, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadambini, when he describes some of the most basic difficulties, challenges that devotees face in the earlier stages of Krishna consciousness. One of them is called Vyuddha Vikalpa. Do you recall that? It means indecision, the inability to make clear decisions about your direction in life and what you should do and your what position you should take in life, or even for that matter, just indecision in a broader sense too. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in discussing this particular one, there's six actually, sort of like initial problems which people in the earlier stages very commonly face. So, but that one, he gives quite an extensive description. And the description he gives of that indecision and being caught between two possibilities in an important aspect of one's life is how a young devotee may be caught between, should I be a Krishna conscious householder or should I be a Krishna conscious non-householder? What should I do? Should I be a Krishna conscious householder and have an angelic Krishna conscious housewife who is just going to just look after me as the very goal of her life and and just, you know, really be such a wonderful asset to me, and so encouraging and positive and helpful. And in this way, I'll become a Krishna conscious Grihastha. Or should I avoid what some people say? Those some people, of course, are people in Srimad Bhagavatam. Should I avoid what they say is the deep, dark well of household life? And rather be just focused on Krishna. As they say in South Africa, one way. That's it. One way. You just go for Krishna. What should I do? So he conjectures in different ways, pointing out different benefits of both positions and different shortcomings. A classic. What happens to me if I find I'm now becoming older and some material attraction is still there, but I'm really a bit too old to get married? Oh, a classic catch-22. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. And other, you know, he mentions other just... Well, he's obviously, he's a very brilliant devotee. So he catches some of these classic points on both sides of the argument. So we know anyone who would deny that this question or the whole subject matter is something which, you know, at least sometimes has, you know, really demanded that they consider it very carefully. Anyone who denies that, I'll just tell them they're a liar. It's not really. You know, unless you have appeared in this world as a Paramahansa from above, there's very little likelihood that you have not been at least somewhat perplexed by this at some point in your life, or even for some, through some period of your life like that. So this is the situation. In principle, as pointed out there in regards to the example of the reflected tree in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So the reflected tree, it looks good, but it's got no substance. And there's another problem. Everything is around the wrong way. It's not just that it looks the same, but it's not, doesn't deliver the same. It looks the same, but it's around the other way. What is up is down, and what's down is up, and what's right is left, and what's left is right. Everything is mixed up in a reflection. Everything's mixed up in a reflection. No matter how many times you look in a mirror, you've never seen what you really look like. Unless you get sort of like some double mirror which reflects the reflection, and then you may see your face as other people see your face, and you may be a little surprised when you see it like that. So the attraction between male and female is the basic principle. What is that verse? Punso Sriamajani Bhavam Etam Tayor Mita Hridaya Grantam Ahu. Did I get it?
Yes.
The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of it, one becomes attached to body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. And Srila Prabhupada quotes there. Punas, isn't it from that verse?
It's another verse.
Oh, it's another verse, sorry. Anyway, when one ends up, one way or the other, chewing the chewed, doing the same thing again and again and again and again and again, and actually millions of times. Means millions of lifetimes. And in each lifetime, many, many, many times. Did you ever have in Finland, did you ever do the fish play? Have you heard of the fish play? Mr. Fish falls from the spiritual world into the material world? You've never? Oh, you've never lived. It's one of the most amazing dramas. How Mr. Fish falls, well, the spirit soul falls into the material world, becomes Mr. Fish, and is presented the main types of material enjoyment. Here, have a woman. Here, eat some meat. Here, drink something. Here, smoke something. Here, you know, whatever. Yeah. And actually, the director, well, I don't know if you've heard of the Rocky Horror Show. It was a stage, materialistic stage production that went on in London for like 20 years or something like that. So incredibly popular. The director saw the fish play and he wanted it to put it on in his theater. So it's really quite some fish, some play. And you know, the fish, eventually of course he gets burnt out, he becomes a devotee. But then the devotees, being very creative, they did new versions. There was a new one called Fresh Fish. And the fish goes through some other things. And there were others, I forget, I think there was one called Salted Fish. But in one, the fish is put on trial in some sort of cosmic court for failing to enjoy. He is tried and found guilty of failing to enjoy. What's wrong with you? You're just not a proper citizen. You're failing to enjoy. So this verse then is talking about household life. Particularly, as Prabhupada mentions a couple of times in the purport, it is really talking about materialistic household life. Grihamedi, in fact the word is used in the Sanskrit, Grihamediyan. It is not talking about the Krishna conscious householders. It is talking about the materialistic householders, but even more particularly what you could call the sort of Vedic materialistic householders, or relatively more pious materialistic householders. They don't just go to the factory and get a job and work to get money to buy stuff in the supermarket and enjoy, or to buy a ticket to the nightclub and enjoy, etc. No. They worship the demigods to get their enjoyment. And they do different ritualistic performances, Prabhupada. Well, the verse itself, Lord Kapila mentions, and Prabhupada expands in the purport. All sorts of different, perhaps, sacrifices and different types of pujas and different types of things for achieving material goals. Prabhupada mentions different types of charity, giving different types of charity. in the Karmakandiya section of the Vedas, which is the vast majority of the Vedas, it's particularly the four Vedas themselves, and there are also certainly parts of the Puranas and the other literatures which are essentially Karmakandiya. So the Karmakandiya section of the Vedas talks about what to speak of worshipping different demigods to achieve different specific goals. What to speak of that? The Karmakandiya section of the Vedas talks about giving specific types of charities on specific days to specific people and giving specific things in those ways in order to get specific results. Srila Prabhupada, it's in the first canto, one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada just briefly mentions in a broad sense actually about charity. You give charity to the drunkard in the street. He says, you know, give me some money for a loaf of bread. He does not buy the loaf of bread. He buys some intoxicant of some sort and intoxicates himself and just ruins his life further and entangles himself in further karma. You, who sponsored that by donating the money to him, you share in the karma substantially, because you are responsible. If you had not given the money, he would not have done that sinful activity. He would not have corrupted himself further and ruined his life further. You are responsible, actually. Of course, he wanted it, so there's responsibility on his side. But you cannot deny that you have a substantial degree of responsibility. So you'll take some bad karma. Sri Sri Gaunitai Ki
Jai.
Sri Prahlad Nrsimhadev Ki
Jai.
Then Srila Prabhupada says there that if you give charity to a normal and good material charitable organization, like perhaps Red Cross, Save the Children, or something like that. And then normally they will use the money nicely for helping the suffering people in some way. So in the future, you will get back the same amount you gave them in the future. Then Prabhupada says, you give charity to a qualified Brahmin, not necessarily a devotee, could be a devotee, but a qualified Brahmin. Prabhupada says, you will get 10 times back in the future. Uh-huh. It's an investment. Prabhupada says, you give to a pure devotee of the Lord. If you give to someone like Srila Prabhupada or Srila Prabhupada via his movement, you will get an unlimited number of times back, generally in the next lifetime. Because our karma comes to us generally in our next lifetime. Not entirely, but generally in our next lifetime. So it gives an idea how the process of charity works. And there are people who are aware of this. And they are investment minded. And so they're looking on certain days for certain people to give certain things. And they're into it and they do it in order to get certain results. And then, of course, they're the people who worship the demigods. They're the people who do different sacrifices, which usually also means for demigods. And different types of performances that people do. So, these people, this is Karmakandiya. This is materialistic. And this verse and purport is particularly talking about householders who are living like that. And the verse says, again and again he acts the same way. In the purport, as you may recall, Srila Prabhupada made the point that this type of person has no idea, no desire to change his program to one also Vedic program of devotional service which will take him out of the material world. Generally these people, or at least in many cases, they at least have some idea that there's a possibility of getting out of this world, getting some type of liberation. But Srila Prabhupada makes the point in the purport that generally these Karmakandiya people, who they're really into it, they're not interested in that. But rather they're interested in just perpetuating material existence in that way. In that pious, material, ritualistic way. So they continue to enjoy material life, lifetime after lifetime. And they may have, in many cases, they have the idea that this is just an ongoing program. It's not just for this lifetime. It's just ongoing. We will live like this forever. We will worship the demigods and in this way enjoy. At least in many cases, they feel like that. So as the verse says, again and again, he does the same thing. I was reading the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to this verse last night. And he says, it is something like a person who owns cows. He milks them in the morning and takes them out to graze later. And the next day he milks them in the morning and takes them out to graze later. And the next day he milks them in the morning and takes them out to graze later. And the next day, take a guess what happens. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives this as an example that you just go on and on and on and on. Perpetuating material existence. Unfortunately for them, it is not that necessarily in the next life you'll just continue. This material world is full of many challenges. And even people who are very pious and who are doing Karmakandiya and all these different things very systematically, with specific goals in mind and really working on it, they can easily make even a small mistake and in the next lifetime really get smashed, really suffer severely. And then as they come through that, who knows if they're going to get into Karmakandiya again, or who knows what will happen. Maybe through some small mistake, maybe they'll have to take birth in a lower species even. The classic example of that given in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam is King Nrig. You've probably heard of King Nrig. He was one of these very, very pious, and you could say very meticulous followers of Karmakandya. And one of his particular programs was charity, and particularly giving cows. He would give cows to Brahmins. So one day, he gave a cow, or some cows, to a Brahmin. Somehow, one of them came back to the king. And the next day, or sometime shortly afterwards, King Nrig gave another group of cows to another Brahmin, but it included that cow. And that, the first Brahmin, he had just realized what had happened, and he came back to speak to King Nrig, you know, what's going on here? And he saw that cow going off, having been given to another Brahmin. So he got really, really disturbed. How could you do this? This is a story, right? It's along these lines. How could you do this? That's my cow. You can't give her to someone else. It's already mine. And King Nrig said, oh, but if I give her back to you, I will have to take her away from someone who I just gave, from another Brahmin who I just gave her to. And the problem's going to be the same. Why don't I give you 10? I'll give you another cow. No. I want that cow. I'll give you 10 cows. No. I want that cow. I'll give you 100 cows. No. This is my cow. You're looking at the cow in the wrong way. This is my cow. So poor old King Nrig, despite everything, what happened to him? He ended up as a lizard in the bottom of the well, wasn't it? He got saved by Krishna. If we end up in the bottom of a well, don't count on Krishna rescuing us. You know, it's not that it happens every time. But what does happen is people make mistakes in these Karmakandya activities, which are actually very demanding, and then they end up in big trouble. Big trouble. Another classic example is in the 6th canto. Vishwaroop was killed by Lord Indra. His father, Twashta, wanted to take revenge by producing from sacrifice some powerful being who could, he said, the mantra said, who could become the enemy of Indra. In other words, kill Indra. It's a nice way of saying kill Indra. But he mispronounced the one word. Indra Kshatro. Yes, he missed out one syllable. And therefore, instead of it being the person who becomes the enemy of Indra, it was the person who Indra is the enemy of, which again is a nice way of saying who can be killed by Indra. And Vritrasura appeared, and he was killed by Indra. So the whole attempt was a failure. Yes. So anyway, this is one perspective. In Hinduism, of course, well, Hinduism is basically this, at least in many, many ways. Hinduism is this. You choose your Ishta Deva. Depending on your goal, you choose your Ishta Deva, or maybe a few if you've got a number of goals, and then you do some program for them. And the idea is, you will achieve their planet in your next life or something to that effect. This is the idea. Of course, how it is done nowadays, it is all very, improperly done, actually. All that demigod worship, all the chanting of the mantras and the performance of the sacrifices, and it's very difficult because it's very demanding to do these things. Yeah, a person has to be super expert to do them effectively. Therefore, the performers of Karma Kandya, who may be hoping to be elevated to Indra Loka, if they're lucky, they may be elevated in terms of material facility to Helsinki. Or if they're really, by relative standards, if they've really done well, they may be elevated to the United States. And if they really, really did well, they may be elevated to California. And that's about as far as they're going to go. Green card. Supreme achievement. But now here, of course, we, most at least of us, are not from that sort of background. And if we were, or some of us may be already, or some of us may be going to become Krishna conscious householders, it is not so likely we're going to adopt some serious program of Karma Kandya, but rather attempt some serious program of Krishna conscious Grihastha life. So these particular challenges of the attraction to demigod worship and those types of ritualism, they're generally not challenges for, at least say, Western devotees from Western backgrounds, if or when they enter household life. There are generally, you might say, more simple challenges. Will we follow a certain one of the regulative principles? Or, how will we deal with that? How will we deal with that? And without going into, any detailed discussion on that subject, but, there are different theories. Just stick with your own husband or wife. That's good enough. Anyway, there are all sorts of variations how to apply or misapply or not really properly apply what in Russia is called the fourth regulative principle. Yes. And should it be a regulative principle? Should we just have three? After all, in an academic course, if you get 75%, 3 out of 4, you've passed. Some sort of, obviously with a leaning towards more flexibility, some sort of perspective like that. But this is not really Grihastha. What is Grihastha? When does Grihastha sort of start lapsing into the Grihamedi realm? But this is a classic type of situation in which devotees who really, they want to be Krishna conscious, but now they're there in each other's company, husband and wife, spending a lot of time together, and the material conditioning is there quite strongly, and so the attractions are there. In so many cases, when at least Western devotees become householders, if they become Grihamedis, or start, you know, heading in that direction, in many, many cases, this is the sort of the particular thing, which is, you know, the thing which it's all turning on. So Srila Prabhupada makes it clear in the purport, he really makes it very clear. What is a grihasta? What is a grihamedi? Grihamedi is a person who their idea is we will enjoy materially. That's our idea. But a grihasta, Krishna conscious householders, they are people who they want self-realization. They want Krishna consciousness. But they, because of their nature, and they're actually different possibilities ultimately, they may conclude, better I be a grihasta than, well, if one is not a grihasta, one is in, and one is a devotee, one is in a celibate position, or should be in a celibate position, or is in a position that should be celibate, that because of whatever reasons, generally, particularly my own nature, better I become a grihasta than continue on as a brahmachari or brahmacharini, as an unmarried person. Better I become a householder. It'll be better for my Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada would refer to Krishna conscious grihasta life as a type of license for sense gratification. Obviously, that's a fact. And not simply in regards to illicit sex, I mean to sex life as such, but in different respects. It's a license. But licenses, well, as we know, for things which are quite demanding and they have to be done carefully and you need some qualification to do them properly, those are the types of things you need a license for. You need a license to drive a motor car. You don't need a license to ride a bicycle, you know, a pedal bicycle. You don't need a license. Even they're usually given to little children. And they go, you know, running around here and there on their bicycles. But a motorbike or a motor car, you need a license because it's more demanding. And if you don't know how to do it properly, you can create serious problems for yourself and for others. Just because you have a driving license doesn't mean you can drive down, what's the name of the main street of Helsinki?
Mannerheimintie.
Mannerheimintie. Something along those lines. That you can drive down Mannerheimintie Street. Anyway, that street. At 200 kilometers an hour. At midday on Saturday. And when the police stop you, you just pull out your license and say, it's okay, boys, you can relax, I've got a license. Or if you have a license for a firearm, for a gun, that you can just go shoot a few people and say, don't worry, I'm licensed, it's cool, everything's cool. So similarly in Krishna conscious grihasta life, that one cannot just pull out the license or the marriage certificate or the photos from the fire sacrifice and say, well, anything goes because we are officially connected like that. Of course, we're making a caricature of it. we hope at least. But there are standards for real Grihastha life. And again, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, in real Grihastha life, the husband is really not attached to his wife. He's actually Krishna conscious. And the goal is self-realization. So, I mean, you know, Prabhupada did not mean that he's so detached, so unattached, or unattached in such a way that he just doesn't care, and therefore he's negligent and just, you know, let them go jump in the lake or something of that sort at all. A real Krishna conscious Grihastha will be really very responsible in Krishna consciousness and in terms of material requirements also, will be extremely fully responsible. But still, that material attachment, that gross attraction, and, you know, the real drive to carry it out and put it into effect. This is not Krishna conscious Grihastha life. Krishna conscious Grihastha life is something else. Actually, it's very sacred. It's very sacred. It's an ashram. An ashram means a place for spiritual development. This is what the term means. Yes. And a wonderful example is there in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, right at the end of, I think it's the 10th chapter. Anyway, the first of the two chapters about Lord Ram. The last two verses describe Lord Ram as the, shall we say, Krishna conscious husband. Or anyway, yeah. Ram conscious husband. What an amazing husband he was. That he looked after Sita so well. And in every respect. And the particular example Prabhupada gives in the purport is that when Sita was kidnapped by Ravan, Lord Ram went to great lengths as a husband to rescue her, even though it was extremely dangerous and it was a massive endeavor. But he undertook that and he carried it out successfully as on the basis of being a transcendental husband. And Prabhupada makes the point in the purport that as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ram could have just manifested some more Sitas. I mean, what to speak of just one more to replace, but any number of Sitas. Prabhupada doesn't mention right there, but elsewhere Prabhupada mentions that Lord Ram could have killed Ravan by remote control. After all, he is within the heart of every living entity. Ram, Krishna Ram, the same. He's also within the heart of Ravan. Not a nice place to be, but he was there. And if he'd wanted, he could have effortlessly, in 1 second, just leant over and switched off the switch, the heart switch. And that would have been it. Good night, brother. And he could have just reached his arm out and plucked Sita out of the Ashok Grove at any point, just, and there she is in 1 second. for that matter, he's omniscient. He could have just stopped Ravana before he was able to attempt anything, rather than wait till later. But Prabhupada makes the point elsewhere that, you know, why did Lord Ram deal with the situation in that way and go to such extraordinary lengths? And even millions of people and even quite a few of his own monkey followers were killed, actually, all to rescue Sita. And it took days and a massive effort. So why? Srila Prabhupada said that the Lord wanted to show how much his devotee means to him. That for his devotee, no effort on the part of the Lord is too great. He's willing to do anything. Or as Prabhupada says in that purport in the ninth canto, as the dutiful husband and transcendental husband, it was his duty to protect Sita. He did it. And there was no question of at some point, well, look, it's getting too difficult, you know, I'm feeling tired. I think I'll just manifest another Sita. He did what it took to protect his wife. And then the next verse talks about Sita. Because Lord Ram was so, just such a perfect husband, literally, she would do whatever he wanted. He would fulfill all her desires. She would fulfill all of his. And whatever she wanted, he would immediately arrange that. She did not have to adopt the current day popular strategy, nagging, henpecking. I want this. Can't afford it. But I want this. No money. I want it. Anyway, you know what I mean. Just on and on and on and on and on. Until the poor husband just gives up. All right, all right. or just seduction or whatever it may be. So, but the actual love between Lord Ram and Mother Sita was of such a nature that they were willing to look after each other in the appropriate ways as transcendental grihasthas. And they were both fully happy. More than fully happy. And Prabhupada makes the point in one of those two purports. If people live today, if householders live today, as Sita and Ram lived, this whole planet can become heavenly. It will become heavenly. And everyone will be fully happy. So, these are some thoughts on the subject. I think there are more verses on the subject coming. So you'll get more enlightenment of these things as time goes on. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any comment or question?
Guru Maharaj, is it so that there is equal opportunity for progress in Krishna consciousness in all the ashrams?
Yeah. If it's the right ashram for you, it's the best ashram for you. And what's the best ashram for different people is, it's a very personal thing. And to just, you know, to just generalize, of course some degree of generalization can be there. You know, in many ways, Prabhupada encouraged the brahmacharis to remain brahmacharis. In many ways. And in many or certain ways, he sort of discouraged grihastha life. But then, under other circumstances, to people who are in certain situations in life, he encouraged Krishna conscious grihastha life. Yeah. Note, Krishna conscious grihastha life. Because in the longer term, for some people it's better. For some people, they'll become more Krishna conscious if they become Krishna conscious householders than if they are celibate currently, than if they attempt to remain celibate. Yeah. But other people should stick with being celibate. Other people should stick with being celibate. And that will actually be better for them. So, you know, Prabhupada was the master of the, you know, just very brief little statement which captures something very nicely. Prabhupada said, yes, for the men to be brahmachari is good, and for ladies to be married is good. So Prabhupada said, so all the men should remain brahmacharis, all the ladies should get married. And Prabhupada said, this is the only contradiction in Krishna consciousness. However, we have noticed something. You know what? We have noticed something. That so many of the ladies get married. Okay. Prabhupada said like that. I mean, to a large extent, any lady who wants to get married, sooner or later, by Krishna's arrangement, it happens. But the interesting point is, they usually marry men. And you get as many married men as there are married women. Wow. Interesting phenomenon. So the idea that just women should get married, men shouldn't, there's not so much substance to it really. You know, in a certain sense there's some substance to it. But, you know, you could say the statistics tell us that really there's not so much substance to it. So devotees should try to find what is the suitable situation for them, and in a very Krishna conscious way, as much as they're able, try and sort of fit into that and live like that as much as they're able. Yeah. You know, anyway, yeah, I think that's enough said for the time being. Yeah.
Maharaj, yesterday you made comments on Krishna consciousness and Krishna conscious culture.
Right.
And you mentioned that in Helsinki, a devotee can very nicely practice Krishna consciousness and Krishna conscious culture.
Right.
So could you comment about the culture side?
The culture side?
Yeah. Krishna conscious culture.
Well, I was particularly referring to Subhekshana Prabhu and team and those like him who are putting some energy into Krishna conscious culture here. That's particularly what I was referring to, which is, as far as I can make out, I mean, maybe I can't see that much, but it seems that here the devotees are getting a little more attention and, you know, opportunity for these types of seminars and whatnot than in many other places. Like I go to Russia, and there are many devotees, There are many, many devotees all over, but they don't have these types of seminars, generally. Maybe in a few places like Moscow, but even say St. Petersburg, the second city, I don't think it happens so much. So here, there's good opportunity like that. You know, I noted, because I'm based in South Africa, we are mainly working with Indian people of Indian origin, Hindu people, actually. And so many thousands and thousands have become devotees. I noted what Tatvavad Prabhu said last night about some of the devotee families who were present, Lenin and yourself, I guess. And he seemed to be expanding it further to include, it seemed, maybe I got it wrong, but your sort of typical Hindu family who's ended up in Helsinki, you know, working to make money. And I thought, knowing many, 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 many Hindu families, you know, and I was thinking, there's a challenge for the Hindu community in Helsinki. Be good examples of the culture. And that devotees can learn from watching the Hindu families. I mean, to a limited degree, there's truth in it. To a limited degree. But it's also a challenge for the Hindu families. Because they normally come out of India to make money. That's the general thing. And so many of them slowly or at whatever rate lose the culture and lose the religion for that matter. So that's a challenge for people like yourself and Lenin and other Indian families who are connected with the movement to, you know, it is expected of you from the outset that you'll set a good example in terms of culture, like a family standards and things like that, and not just lapse into Bollywood kuch kuch hota hai culture, because that's not Vaishnav culture. Is that okay?
So the Grihastha Ashram is provide all of the ashrams, create a shelter to the brahmachari, to the sannyasis, and to the also the vanaprastha.
That's true. It should be. It should be. The Grihasthas should provide materially for those who are not Grihasthas, for the devotees who are not Grihasthas. Means brahmacharis, vanaprastas, and sannyasis. It's such a sacred duty for the grihasthas. It's such a sacred duty. In other words, well, Prabhupada once, one devotee told me many years ago, Prabhupada had actually just left the planet, I think it was 79, maybe even 78. So he was a disciple of Prabhupada and a householder. And Prabhupada was present when he got married at the actual, or in the temple visiting. And Prabhupada knew about it. The next morning, the husband went on the Prabhupada's morning walk and he thought, right, here I am with Prabhupada. I'm going to ask him for some elaboration. What do I do now in the household? So he asked Prabhupada, what are the duties of grihasthas? Prabhupada looked at him and said, be charitable, don't be miserly, and turned around and just walked. Prabhupada then went on to some other place, like a week, couple of weeks later, Prabhupada was in another place. That devotee somehow or other ended up in that place also and went for a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. And he had thought, you know, the first time he thought, gee, is that all you got to say, Prabhupada? Can't we have a more sort of profound talk about Grihastha Dharma? So he thought, well, maybe Prabhupada was in a rush or something. I'll ask him again. So on the morning walk, it was like 2 to 3 weeks later, he asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, what are the duties of the Grihasthas? Prabhupada turned around, looked at him and said, be charitable, don't be miserly. It's a big part of Grihastha Dharma. You know, Grihastha Dharma, for the Grihasthas who are independently financing themselves. So yeah, to give shelter and help in so many ways, particularly the brahmacharis, well, and particularly all those who are in the celibate position. Very important part of Grihastha Dharma. Yes, brother.
On the same line, just one place, Prabhupada wrote a letter to one devotee and he says, life for Krishna, money for wife, that is not a good system.
Okay. Right. That's good. So this was the very devotee who Prabhupada had said that to, told me that. Yeah. This is what happened to him. Okay, I think is it getting late? It's getting late. Let's carry on. There'll be more time for further discussion. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Swami Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj ki
jai.